Listening part 1. You will hear 5 people speaking about their teaching. For questions 1 to 5, choose from the list A to F which statement applies to which speaker. Use the letters only once. There's one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the text twice. You now have 30 seconds to look at part 1.
Speaker 1.
I teach English literature, especially the later works of William Blake. I think the study of literature is what university should be all about understanding the human soul and describing the nature of the human condition. I think even students who are studying practical subjects like engineering or medicine need this kind of education. It gives you a much broader outlook on life.
Speaker 2.
I do teach, of course. It's mostly research students now, so my teaching is one-to-one, but I do give the occasional lecture to undergraduates in the department. But teaching isn't my main responsibility anymore. We've been given a grant to do research into the uses of lasers, and that's what I spend most of my time doing. It's a big change from when I started out, I can tell you.
Speaker 3.
Students are much more concerned about jobs nowadays than they were when I was at university. I teach what's called a sandwich course in engineering. They spend some time in university, some time in work, and then finish off at university. And the work placement is very important. They learn that engineering's a serious business. You can't build bridges if they fall down and kill people.
Speaker 4.
I've been teaching law for 15 years. I can't say I've got used to it. In fact, it's got worse recently, what with more students going to university. There are more students in the lectures. I gave up practicing law because I got so nervous before a case, and it's the same with lectures and tutorials. The students are so clever these days. I mean, they ask such clever questions. You have to be extremely well prepared, and, well, perhaps I've been teaching a bit too long because I don't really enjoy it anymore.
Speaker 5.
I've been very fortunate over the last few years. I've enjoyed my teaching, and the students seem to have enjoyed it too, which is good. They give very good reports to the university, and we get good results. But I think that's the students more than me. And now I've been nominated as a Fellow of the Royal Society. It's a great honour, which I'm sure I don't deserve.
Now you will hear part 1 again.
Speaker 1.
I teach English literature, especially the later works of William Blake. I think the study of literature is what university should be all about understanding the human soul and describing the nature of the human condition. I think even students who are studying practical subjects like engineering or medicine need this kind of education. It gives you a much broader outlook on life.
Speaker 2.
I do teach, of course. It's mostly research students now, so my teaching is one-to-one, but I do give the occasional lecture to undergraduates in the department. But teaching isn't my main responsibility anymore. We've been given a grant to do research into the uses of lasers, and that's what I spend most of my time doing. It's a big change from when I started out, I can tell you.
Speaker 3.
Students are much more concerned about jobs nowadays than they were when I was at university. I teach what's called a sandwich course in engineering. They spend some time in university, some time in work, and then finish off at university. And the work placement is very important. They learn that engineering's a serious business. You can't build bridges if they fall down and kill people.
Speaker 4.
I've been teaching law for 15 years. I can't say I've got used to it. In fact, it's got worse recently, what with more students going to university. There are more students in the lectures. I gave up practicing law because I got so nervous before a case, and it's the same with lectures and tutorials. The students are so clever these days. I mean, they ask such clever questions. You have to be extremely well prepared, and, well, perhaps I've been teaching a bit too long because I don't really enjoy it anymore.
Speaker 5.
I've been very fortunate over the last few years. I've enjoyed my teaching, and the students seem to have enjoyed it too, which is good. They give very good reports to the university. And we get good results. But I think that's the students more than me. And now I've been nominated as a Fellow of the Royal Society. It's a great honour, which I'm sure I don't deserve.
You will hear an interview with Dr. Janet Thompson, who spent many years in Africa observing chimpanzees. For questions 6 to 10, choose the answers A, B, C, or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 30 seconds to look at part 2.
Dr. Janet Thompson, you made some groundbreaking discoveries about chimpanzees when you lived with and observed them all those years in Africa. Mm. For example, you were the first to discover, weren't you, that they use tools like humans?
Yes. Humans were considered to be the only tool-using species, and I wasn't looking for anything different. I was just living there in Gombe and observing the chimpanzees all day, every day. Mm. And then one day, when I was following one of the males, I struggled through a prickly sort of thicket and found him in a clearing. I saw he was very intently using a long blade of grass to poke into a termite's nest, to make it easier for him to get the termites out and eat them. I watched him doing that several times over the next few days before I realised the significance of it. Chimpanzees use tools for all sorts of things, like us, really.
How dangerous has it got on occasions? You must have been frightened of leopards and lions, for example.
Well, the leopards and other things, when I first got to Gombe, you know, I could hear them when I was sleeping out at night, but I thought, oh, well, and I just pull my little blanket over my head and try to ignore them. They're not really that dangerous. Usually, if they hear you coming, they get out of the way. Of course, the chimpanzees in the early days, when they lost their fear, they became rather belligerent. But, in fact, they never have really attacked us.
Pretty dangerous, though. And yet you brought up a child in this environment. Brave or foolhardy, which is it?
Neither, because Grant was brought up in Gombe, when it was really idyllic. There was, well, danger from the chimpanzees, and we had to watch him. But the beach, he could swim like a little fish in the lake. It's clean, pure water. You had to make sure he didn't get attacked by lions and things, but it was so free from pollution. And he liked being the only little one around. He could get malaria, but, you know, think of the worries in the city today.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about father chimpanzees. They don't subscribe much to the family setup, do they?
They play a very important role, actually. They have to protect the territory for the females and young from incursion by other males. We now know they patrol and defend the boundaries or even enlarge them and get more resources for their own females and young. It also turns out that males can, when occasion demands, show really good paternal behaviour and care for orphans. We've seen it several times.
When you realised you had to leave Gombe to tell the world about the chimpanzees' declining numbers, you left your paradise. But now you do all the things that are the antithesis of that paradise, travelling and being surrounded by people, crowds everywhere. How can you bear it when you enjoyed all those years of peace?
I think it's because I feel it's a mission and I have to do it. And you know I had all those years. How many people are lucky enough to live their dream for so long, to be in paradise? Life goes through phases, and I just suddenly knew that the next phase was to begin. Once you know you're supposed to be doing something else, you're not happy in paradise anymore. You know, you can't change fate.
You remain, nevertheless, incredibly optimistic about it all, though, don't you? Why?
Now you will hear part two again.
Dr. Janet Thompson, you made some groundbreaking discoveries about chimpanzees when you lived with and observed them all those years in Africa. For example, you were the first to discover, weren't you, that they use tools like humans?
Yes. Humans were considered to be the only tool-using species, and I wasn't looking for anything different. I was just living there in Gombe and observing the chimpanzees all day, every day. And then one day, when I was following one of the males, I struggled through a prickly sort of thicket and found him in a clearing. I saw he was very intently using a long blade of grass to poke into a termite's nest, to make it easier for him to get the termites out and eat them. I watched him doing that several times over the next few days before I realised the significance of it. Chimpanzees use tools for all sorts of things, like us, really.
How dangerous has it got on occasions? You must have been frightened of leopards and lions, for example.
Well, the leopards and other things, when I first got to Gombe, you know, I could hear them when I was sleeping out at night, but I thought, oh, well, and I just pulled my little blanket over my head and try to ignore them. They're not really that dangerous. Usually, if they hear you coming, they get out of the way. Of course, the chimpanzees in the early days, when they lost their fear, they became rather belligerent, but in fact, they never have really attacked us.
Pretty dangerous, though, and yet you brought up a child in this environment. Brave or foolhardy, which is it?
Neither, because Grant was brought up in Gombe, when it was really idyllic. There was, well, danger from the chimpanzees, and we had to watch him. But the beach, he could swim like a little fish in the lake. It's clean, pure water. You had to make sure he didn't get attacked by lions and things, but it was so free from pollution. And he liked being the only little one around. He could get malaria, but, you know, think of the worries in the city today.
Now, tell me about father chimpanzees. They don't subscribe much to the family setup, do they?
They play a very important role, actually. They have to protect the territory for the females and young from incursion by other males. We now know they patrol and defend the boundaries or even enlarge them and get more resources for their own females and young. It also turns out that males can, when occasion demands, show really good paternal behaviour and care for orphans. We've seen it several times.
When you realised you had to leave Gombe to tell the world about the chimpanzees' declining numbers, you left your paradise. But now you do all the things that are the antithesis of that paradise, travelling and being surrounded by people, crowds everywhere. How can you bear it when you enjoyed all those years of peace?
I think it's because I feel it's a mission and I have to do it. And you know I had all those years. How many people are lucky enough to live their dream for so long, to be in paradise? Life goes through phases and I just suddenly knew that the next phase was to begin. Once you know you're supposed to be doing something else, you're not happy in paradise anymore. You know, you can't change fate.
You remain, nevertheless, incredibly optimistic about it all, though, don't you? Why?